Thursday night's edition of Think Wing Radio on KPFT 90.1 FM Houston. Well, I want to thank everyone who contributed to our Summer Sizzle fundraiser. And remember, you don't have to stop supporting KPFT when the fundraiser ends. You can always go to kpft.org and click on the tip jar and support Think Wing Radio and the diversity of ideas and opinions that we have here, and basically what I like to think of as just an old-fashioned call-in show without necessarily the hyperbole. Occasional rants, maybe. So, kpft.org. Support our show and our station, please. Today is open forum, so I typically come prepared with some stuff I can toss out as topics, but because it's open forum, you're not limited to that. So whatever may be on your mind, whether it's politics or environment or something you saw on the way to work today or something in traffic that drove you crazy, I got a million of those. So whatever it is that floats your boat, please don't feel limited by whatever the topic is that we've been talking about. The phone number is 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. My engineer, as usual, is Egberto Willis. Also, he does join the conversation, and he has some very different ideas from me. He's somewhat, I would say I'm the most conservative liberal at the station.
You are the most conservative liberal at the station.
I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's part of the great
sometimes
intellectual...
Sometimes it's not bad.
Well, sometimes you disagree, but it's never bad. No, I think that it actually speaks well of KPFT, and I think it speaks volumes about KPFT, that someone, that a liberal as conservative as I has a show. I think I represent a little slice of the potential listening audience out there that maybe they're not Sean Hannity, but, you know, maybe they're not Amy Goodman. So who knows? Anyway, so we have open lines, 713-526-5738. A couple of things before I go into one of my main things that I want to talk about. I'll tell you right now that personally, I'm not going to talk about Robin Williams, although it's a horrible tragedy, just because I think that a lot of people are already doing that conversation. I was actually having this discussion with Egberto. It wasn't in my mind to talk about Michael Brown and Ferguson, Missouri, as a headline, just because, again, I don't think that it's an unimportant story. I just think that it's being done and done probably better than I can do it. But if you want to call and talk about it, please do. A couple little things I just want to touch on, just sort of out of nowhere. I was driving to the 610 loop a few days ago, and there was a homeless guy. Now, I have to tell you, I was much more generous with beggars when I was younger. Having seen how some of them are sort of shysters, and having been to China where I could tell you the most blatant, I mean, guys that you can see, they have children out on the street, and you've got an adult sort of watching around a corner, and the kids, I actually had one kid pat my stomach. Now, I don't speak Chinese. There was one kid, and I think it was Beijing or Shanghai, who patted my stomach, basically saying, look how well-fed I am. I can afford to give him some money, and I have to mention, this was not a skinny kid. But be that as it may. So there was this
I get a better story later.
You can share when I'm done with this one. So this guy was on the corner, and normally I don't hand out. Once in a great while, I will. And this particular time, I was with my wife, and it was really hot out. This was like 103 degrees. So I said to my wife, do we have an unopened bottle of water? And she did, and it was warm because it had been in the car, but at least it was wet. So I opened the window to give him the water. He said, no, I don't want water, man. I want money. So it's like, okay, well... And then we looked, we had some candy. It's not food, but, you know, it's carbs and it's energy and it's something to chew on or suck on. And so we offered him, he said, no, man, you're giving me everything I want except money. So this kind of goes back to what do you do about, and I'm going to use the all-inclusive term of homeless people. Not everybody who's begging on a street corner is homeless, frankly. I suspect this guy wanted money so he could buy liquor. I once saw something on Facebook, and I don't remember which page it was on. Maybe it was a KPFT page, about a guy who told a story about how he had moved to the West Coast to take a job that he had accepted. But when he got there, he couldn't afford initially to take an apartment. He was living in his car for the first few weeks until he got a couple of paychecks where he could make a deposit and start to pay rent and this kind of stuff. So the story he wrote was he always, it's kind of like anyone who's been a waiter, anyone who's been a restaurant server, they're always generous tippers because it's really hard work and they understand the job. This guy had been homeless, so he understood how hard that was. So he says he keeps essentially like little care packages in the car. And the care packages might have a bottle of water or soda. They might have like a gift card for Subway or McDonald's or something like that. So that way he can give them some assistance without enabling an addiction. And that's a nice story. And that story was in my head when I offered this guy the bottle of water. You know, I'm not going to give him money to buy liquor, but at the very least I can help him stay hydrated so he doesn't die from heat stroke. But this kind of took me back to my experience in China, where you had these really bold, aggressive beggars that would, you know, they would block your path and they would touch you and sort of hear what would be considered misdemeanor assault. So this is part of the quandary I have that I think a lot of people have with beggars and why it really is advisable to not give them money. You know, if they want food, give them food. If you keep $10 Subway gift cards around so that they can buy some sandwiches, that's great too. Or give to something like the Star of Hope Mission or some other entity that helps people find shelter and maybe turn their lives around because you can't get a job if you don't have a phone number or a mailing address or something. So anyway, that's just kind of from out of left field. And John, we have a caller. John, I'm sorry. I appreciate your patience. I'm not accustomed to getting somebody this early in the show. Normally, I have to yap for 15 minutes before I have somebody to talk to. How have you been?
I've been wonderful. I called up and redid my membership when I think it was 2 weeks ago when you started.
Well,
and what I'm curious about, what was the young man's name that just could not stop?
Oh,
you remember
Ernesto?
Oh, that oh my goodness!
He's our program director, so be careful what you say. He gave me a show, so I don't want to be too hard on him.
Yeah, it was wonderful. I was sitting there listening. I listened to you on my drive home from work because I always tell you, and I was just sitting there going, "My goodness, how much coffee has this guy had?"
He gets enthusiastic. He's done this a few times. So he has all the patter in his head, and he believes in the mission, as I've come to.
It
was kind of like trying to talk over Robin Williams, wasn't it?
That's a good example, yeah.
It's timely.
But I just wanted to let you know, I've told you in the past, every time I listen to your show, I learn something new.
Okay.
And it's like going to college classes. And I enjoy it so much, and that's specifically why I made my membership donation when I was listening to your show.
I appreciate that. Thank
you so that's
much.
All right. You're one of the best commentators, newscasters, whatever you want to call it, that I listen to. I just think it's wonderful.
Oh, my Lord. You're
and if you have
push.
One moment about the beggars thing.
Yes.
I grew up in Chicago, and I worked downtown with a friend of mine. And we would go through what they used to call Skid Row.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a soft touch, but his thing was, tell me your story.
That was his
and
thing?
The man or woman would have to explain to my friend Jerry how he ended up or she ended up in that situation. And my favorite story was, as you were referring to alcohol abuse, this one man said that he was in the Navy, and Jerry said, well, what did you do in the Navy? He said, I drove a tank.
Well, that explains a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, but But Jerry got such a laugh out of me, so I had to give him some money.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting strategy. It's like, in a sense, making them earn the money. Tell me a story.
Yeah, hey, you know, you lost your job like the gentleman you spoke about in the car. He had a story. You know, and I pick up my wife at Greens Point every once in a while, and there's the same two people on the off-ramp every time I go there. And it's like, okay, you know, what's going on here? But I think the gentleman's idea of the gift cards is brilliant.
It is.
Yes.
But this guy would not have wanted it.
Yeah, isn't that something?
Didn't want the water, didn't want candy. All he wanted was money, which said, I want to buy liquor, and you're not helping me buy liquor.
That's true, yeah. Liquor or whatever other addiction he had.
Yeah.
All right, but anyway, I wanted to let you know I re-upped my membership, listening to your show. Thank you. I hope you're on forever. I love listening to you.
Oh, we agree.
And you make me laugh as well.
I try. You know, it can't all be serious stuff. Even serious stuff has to have a humorous context.
That's true. You take care, and thanks for the entertainment.
Thank you so much, John. I greatly appreciate all your compliments.
Have a good night.
You too. Bye-bye. Well, apparently, we have open lines, but filling, 713-526-5738. I may not have to use any of the stuff that I came up with tonight. Gary, you're on the air. Yes, you are on the air. I wasn't sure if Egberto was all occupied with another phone call. How are you doing tonight, Gary?
I'm doing very good, actually, but I wanted to tell you a true story about some people on the street corner with signs and begging. And this was a few years back, and I was driving down. Actually, it was Gessner Road, and I was at I-10, and all these people were there with signs, we'll work for food, mm-hmm. need a job. And one guy came up, and he had a sign. He was all grizzly with a gray beard, and his sign said, I need a beer, and that's the truth. And I just happened to have, I was on my way to Galveston, I had a cooler full of beer, so I gave the guy a cold beer. And,
cool.
And I mean, you know, you just can't beat honesty, you know.
There's something to be said for it.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks so much, Gary.
Good night.
Good night. You're listening to KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. I'm Mike Honig. This is Think Wing Radio, and I've got Egberto Willis here, and he's always willing to jump in with his two cents. And since we often disagree in a friendly way, that can make for interesting discussions. Open lines, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. And I've got another John on the phone. John, how are you doing today? You're on the air.
Good evening. When did you move to this time slot? I've never heard you here before.
I got this time slot in mid-December. I had done some shows for KPFT on HD on their HD3 channel for a few months. I've sometimes sat in for Dwayne Bradley in the morning show.
Yeah, I know about that. But I didn't know you moved from HD3. But it's hard to tell because they still will not put that schedule up online.
Really?
But yeah. But anyway,
we'll have to make a note
about the bums.
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to realize that they, like you said, they don't want your gift cards or something like that. One time, I took a bunch of cans to recycling, and I got $17. And it was the day after Thanksgiving. I remember that. And I was at the corner of Eldridge and Westheimer, and there was a guy out there on one leg with a crutch. And he had a sign up, and he said, money, please. That's it. And I was sitting there at the stoplight, and I said, hey. And he said, yeah. And I said, here, happy Thanksgiving. And I just gave him everything I had. It was $17 and some change. The guy's like, wow, holy. Well, you know what he said.
Yeah.
But then and I said, hey, and I said, did you lose your leg in the war? He said, nope. And I said, you want to talk about it? And he said, nope. And I said, okay, good. I said, well, hey, man, go get yourself a bottle or a rock or something. He looked at me and he goes, no crap. I go, man, I gave you the money. Do with it what you want. And I go, really? I mean, it's not like you're one hot meal away from turning your life around, is it? And he said, you know, it ain't. But he said, you'd be surprised how many people think that's all it takes. So.
Insightful.
So sometimes, you know, what you think this guy needs are not what's going to help him get through the day. Okay?
I will tell you a story that you reminded me of. I used to work up by Willowbrook Mall. And there's an intersection there, and I can't remember the name of the street. It's not 249, but it's like 1960 and some street that comes into the mall. And
Bale Northeastern.
No. This was like a street that sort of teed into the mall, not Bamel Northeastern, from the north side.
Okay.
Anyway, so there was a guy often there on the median, a one-legged guy on crutches, and he would have his sign, and this was like his spot. Once, I happened to be sitting at a light while he was coming to his spot for his shift. The guy had a prosthetic leg. He was carrying his crutch. He had a prosthetic leg. He was walking over to the intersection with his girlfriend. They got to the decorative wall on the side of the street. He took off his leg. He gave it to his girlfriend. The girlfriend sat down a little bit out of sight, but so she could see him. He then got on the crutch with the one leg and hobbled over to the median and took out his handmade cardboard sign. Now, if that kind of stuff doesn't make you cynical, nothing will.
Well, yeah, okay, but in cases like that, okay, this guy was, you could tell he hadn't had anywhere to clean up in a few days, and I mean, he stunk to high heaven, you know, and just, I was kind of sorry I got him over by my car, you know.
Well,
yeah, I know, and there are people, and they had this on, you know, Channel 13 or 11 a few years ago about people who drive the SUVs over and then hop out and go stand in the, on the median, you know, with the "We'll work for food" signs, but,
Well, you know, you have to figure that traffic light probably changes more or less about 30 times an hour. So if he gets a buck,
well, hey,
every
I
five
with
changes.
A guy who he couldn't stay off the pipe, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And he pawned his car and everything. Mm-hmm. I saw him about 3 days later on Westheimer, and I'm like, "What are you doing here?" And he says, "Man," he says, "I ain't cleaning pools no more." He goes, "And you know what?" He goes, "I'm getting $200 a day here." So
that's I have heard that some of these people, and I think his number was higher than most, but there are people that do this that make about $15 an hour if they're on a good corner.
Yeah, well, this is far more than $15 an hour, man.
Well, it was about 20.
That's more than $20 an hour. That's $25 an hour.
Yep.
You know,
he could be working for Google at that kind of money.
Yeah, but then they have to ride that bus.
But it's free, and it's not just a bus; it's a coach.
Yeah. Oh, hey. Another thing is, there was this one lady. I've seen her at three different stores, and obviously she's got no memory for faces, or she wouldn't have remembered me. She would have remembered it was me the second time, let alone the third.
Yeah.
And but the third time, I decided to jazz her, and I'm like, so. What do you need money for? And she's like, and she told me the same story for the third time. It's my grandson's birthday. I need gas money to get to Humble. I got to take him diapers for his birthday because my daughter ain't worth a crap.
Wait, talk about a birthday present that you're not going to like.
And I'm like, diapers for a birthday? And she goes, it's what he needs, and it's the best thing he's going to get.
Socks.
But then here's a weird thing was when she was in, it was at this HEB store. I call it HEB, but it's easier than saying H-E-B.
Yeah, as a Jew, I would stay away from that one.
Well, I'm half Jewish. So
okay, so you can say H-E-B instead of H-E-B-E. It's just half of HEB.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or HEB. But, you
HEB.
Know, when you say HEB, people go, huh?
Well,
when
you said
HEB, people go, oh.
Actually, when you went to see, oh?
Anyway, so, but the third time I saw her and made her tell me a story, I'm like, you know, I said, you got to get a memory for faces. I said, this is the third time you've approached me with this same story, and you can't have three grandkids but all having a birthday that live up in Humble and need diapers within a six-month period. And she's like, oh, I'm sorry, I wasted your time. And I'm like, no, you wasted yours. And I said, I got entertained. But then something happened, and she was in the store, and she went and picked up a birthday cake, and she picked up a six-pack of soda pops and something and some crummy toy, and she went to the register and she paid for it with a debit card, and she says, "How much cash back can I get?" And they said, $50. And she goes, "Well, I need more." And they go, "Well, you're gonna have to come around and make another shopping trip through." And she's like, "Holy cow, see, I ain't got time." So I don't know what was going on. Maybe somebody gave her a card and told her to just do whatever with it. And maybe it really was his birthday that time.
Yeah,
you never know.
Sometimes it's tricky. You know, more than once I have been at a gas station and someone comes over and it's like, you know, I just need like a couple of bucks so I can get some gas, or I need a couple of bucks so I can buy a bus ticket, or, you know, I need a couple of bucks for fill in the blank. And it sounds like a sob story. I had one guy approach me here last week as I was leaving KPFT. And it's like, "Look in my eyes. You can see I'm not on drugs. I just need enough money so I can get to the shelter tonight." And, you know, I'm just not in a position to parse out who's scamming me and who's telling me the truth. I'm just not in a position to do that.
Well, if I got pocket change, they can have it for approaching me. It takes nerve to walk up to people that you, well, I guess, well, for me it does. Maybe not after you get used to it.
Yeah, but you get inured.
Yeah, I figure that they... I figure they earned it, you know, just by coming up to me. So,
I suppose.
As long as they don't start grabbing me or something like that, you know, I have to draw a line there.
Yeah, as long as you're not in Beijing or Shanghai, where they can get really physically aggressive.
Really,
I'm telling you.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, I've taken up enough of your time.
Well, I appreciate you calling.
Anyway, I'll try to remember to listen that you're on there.
Well, thank you very much.
No, I know you're on
there. 10 p.m.
Yeah. Take care.
You too. Bye bye. We have open lines, 713-526-5738. I've never gotten past the topic of homeless people. That's kind of interesting. Egberto, you got any stories you want to share?
Well, actually, the story is out of sequence right now, so let's move on to
the
next subject.
Okay, let's move on. Another little thing that I was going to mention. You know, I'm going to say joined, but I use that term very loosely. I have joined some subscriber lists for various Democratic and liberal causes. So, you know, Obama and Frankel and, you know, just different things. The DCCC, CCC, three of them, the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. I finally got so disgusted with them because I was getting 10, 20 emails a day. You know, it's from Nancy Pelosi, it's from this person and that person. It's like, we only need $3. We only need $5. This really is urgent. We have a deadline tonight. Every night, it seems, they have a deadline. And, you know, I respect that the party needs support. And I respect the fact that only a very tiny percentage of people contribute to a party. Now, my $3 isn't like a Koch brothers $100,000, but numbers, you know, it adds up. But it got to the point where I was getting so many emails from these people. It's the first time I have unsubscribed from a list of people I generally agree with. And the reason I gave them was that they had abused their email privileges and that their emails had become the equivalent of spam. So for a couple of blessed weeks, I got a little less email in my box. And then today I got two. So I unsubscribed again. And this time I told them, now you're not only spamming me, but you're refusing to take me off your subscribers list. We'll see how this goes. It just goes to show that even people that are on your side, you can wear out your welcome if you're not careful. I still get stuff from People for the American Way and MoveOn.org and I can't even think of all the names. I mean, I get a lot of this stuff, but the DCCC... they just totally abused the privilege. I've got Tony on the line. I appreciate your calling, Tony. How are you doing tonight?
Hey, how you doing?
Okay, you're on the air.
Hey, this is the first time I've listened to your show.
Oh, thank you.
It's very interesting. I had to call in because the thing about the homeless people that you were talking about, I was fundraising for the Leukemia Society. And we were picking corners around town to see what we can get. And I picked Westheimer right there when you come down off the 610 loop to go to the Galleria.
Oh, yeah, hot corner.
I made $150 in 5 hours there.
Wow.
That's why they're out there.
It's not like you had credentials or something.
Pardon me?
It's not like you really had credentials. They were kind of relying on your honesty.
I was out there with a T-shirt said the Leukemia Society. I turned in all my money, you know, because we were doing a fundraiser and we were trying to meet our goal. And I was like,
hello? I think I accidentally lost Tony. I apologize, Tony. I think we had a little boo-boo. If you want to call back, you can finish that story. I would love to hear the end of it. No, I don't have somebody on the air. Mariswell? Is that the name? Okay. There, we're on the air now. Is it Mariswell?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
that's an interesting name. It's pretty. It's unusual. So how are you doing tonight? You're on the air.
Oh, very good. Thank you.
Well,
what's
on your
mind? I was enjoying your program.
Thank you.
And I like some of the topics because what you were saying was so true, Singer. And another thing that I want to comment, why do the Republicans want to destroy everything that's good in the world? Like, for instance, the school system, the postal service, and the union?
That's a great question. It's a deeply philosophical question. And I think Egberto, just judging from the look on his face, is bursting to be the one to answer that. And then depending on what he says, I'll probably chip in something. Egberto, you want to try and take a shot at that?
Yeah, okay. Mariswell, that's a perfect question. And the reality is it's all about ideology, okay? These guys believe in a concept put out there by a famous lady that was famous for being famous called Ayn Rand, okay? They believe in the theology according to Ayn Rand, and that
is... And that's spelled A-Y-N, by the way.
A-Y-N-R-A-N-D. And that is, you care about yourself only, you care about nothing else but yourself. If you cannot be self-sufficient, you die. And I really mean that.
Yeah, social Darwinism.
Yes. In other words, if you can't take care of yourself, if you get sick, whatever the case is. Now, they don't deny that it's okay for churches to help you or all that kind of stuff. But as far as taking taxes from other people to make society a better place, they do not believe in that. Now, they have to temper those beliefs in order to get some votes. And actually, they've been doing a good job.
Well, they
job.
Don't temper the beliefs. They lie.
They lie. You know what, Mike? I'm impressed. You're exactly
yeah,
right.
They don't temper the beliefs. They just say what they think people want to hear
they
to
lie.
Vote for them.
And the reality is they have to lie to make people believe these theories that say their way is a better way. Now, there's a lot of evidence out there that proves otherwise. But the reality it has turned into a very, very selfish ideology that has no purpose for the average middle-class person.
It's an every-man-for-himself ideology.
Right.
So it takes the concept of a United States and it gets into what they call a sovereign person, where you don't have a country, you have a person who happens to live within the borders of a place. And I think that the only thing they agree on is that the purpose of the state is to defend the borders of the state.
Exactly.
After that, they don't want the government to be involved in anything.
And what they fail to realize is that the success of the United States is directly related to all what was placed into it by its people and by the capital of its people. And, America would not be the great nation without the roads. It would not be the great nation without the education.
And they didn't build that.
And exactly. So think about that. The taxpayer dollars of everybody else did that. The thing about it is, sadly, if we were to adopt the ideology
lock,
stock, and barrel.
It's a gun analogy, actually.
Is that a gun? Oh, yeah. Bad one to use. But anyway, if we were to adopt that analogy, what's interesting about the whole thing is what that would actually do is that would make sure that we get back into a state where we really have feudalism, where we really have only those people with money educated, only those people with money having the ability to have security and all that sort of thing. And think about it. That leaves people in a position where they don't have the will to fight.
Now, I'm going to add a little to that. I don't disagree with anything you've said so far, but I want to just sort of supplement it. In the late 19th, early 20th centuries, there was something called anarchism that was becoming a real political concern among nations around the world. President McKinley was shot by an anarchist. And anarchy essentially says that as a person, the current terminology would be, as a person, you are sovereign. The government has no right to tell you what you can or cannot do, or should not do. The government shouldn't be involved in social safety nets. The government shouldn't be regulating business. The government essentially shouldn't have any role in telling anybody how to live their life, nor should the government be able to help aid you in any way. Now, my personal opinion, and I once wrote a little short piece on my blog, thinkwingradio.com, about this, I think that today's really right-wing conservative Republicans and the libertarians, I think that both of those groups are really just rebranded anarchists. Because when you listen to their proposals are very anarchistic. The government shouldn't interfere with anything. The government shouldn't do anything. The government shouldn't prevent anything. If you have a disaster, the government shouldn't send aid. It should be the problem of your state to resolve or your community to resolve. These people are anarchists, and they can call themselves whatever they want, but I think it's important that people see them as what they are, which is the literal definition of anarchist. It's like you've got flavors of vegetarianism, you've got flavors of anarchism, and these people are just one flavor of being anarchists. Does that... We've done a lot of talking, and you've done a lot of listening, and I feel like maybe we've sort of drowned you out. Does that answer any of your questions, Maryswell, or do you have any thoughts on that? Are you still there? Hello? I think we may have lost...
Mary, still there? Marisuela?
Well, maybe she's just been listening. All right. I'm sorry if we lost you somewhere, but that explains why you were so quiet during this conversation. You're listening to KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. This is Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig, with my engineer, Egberto Willis, who also contributes mightily to the show. And we have open lines, 713-526-5738. Stacy, you are on the air. Thank you so much for calling. What's on your mind tonight?
Hi, I wanted to address Mary Swallow's comment.
Okay.
Because, I mean, I think that definitely the reason that Republicans are, it depends on which Republicans you're talking about. I mean, you've got Republicans that are in power that want to stay in power, and then you've got the followers. And the followers, you know, they just have this sort of, you know, I mean, liberals have no respect for authority, and Republicans have too much.
Okay, so, I can get behind that.
You know, I think that they have this sort of anal life view that is somewhat, you know, perhaps primitive. I don't know. But here's an interesting thing that I wanted to comment on is that, you know, you talk about the Tea Party Republicans. Let's call them let's just say libertarians.
Okay.
Libertarians are against the government and all its, in all its ways, but why are they against the Fed? Because the Fed is not a part of the government, technically. So why aren't they pro-Fed?
I'm sorry, why are they against the, what was that word?
They're against the Fed.
Oh, well.
The Federal Reserve, which is actually a bunch of private banks.
So if they're
so anti-government, why are they against the Fed?
I think I can answer that. You realize that the Fed is not a
governmental agency.
No, it's a private bank. It's kind of quasi-governmental, but because it is appointed, the head of the Fed is appointed by the president. So
if you were really anti-government, you would be for that, right?
No, and I'll tell you why.
Okay, I'll shut up and listen.
Okay, I mean, you don't have to shut up because I interrupt people all the time, but, you know, you can hang out there. I believe that the reason, as I understand it, is because libertarians don't believe in what is called a Federal Reserve note. Libertarians have never been happy with paper money. They always believe in what they call specie or precious metal, metal that has the value of what you're spending in the content of the coin itself. Now, as long as
that's something that I've never understood. What is the value of gold? What are you going to do with it? And the zombie apocalypse, what are you going to do with gold? It's not valuable. It's just a piece of metal.
It's valuable because it's perceived as valuable. You know,
but there's... The stock market's valuable because it's perceived as valuable.
Right. Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, nothing has value unless it's perceived as having value. Thousands of years ago, there were places that used shells.
Food has value, water has value, wine has value, gold gold and money have no value.
Well, they don't have the same value as food, assuming food is available. The thing that gold has going for it and certain other metals is that it is a common form of exchange. Money is a way of storing value. That's what money is for. Otherwise, you have to barter.
It won't be a common form of exchange if all hell breaks loose. Who's going to care about gold?
I think that
people are going to care about guns. They're going to care about food. They're going to care about transportation, fuel.
There always has to be a medium of exchange. There will be something. Something will take the form of money. Maybe it'll be bullets. Maybe it'll be old bottles of liquor. Something has to have, but it has to have something that someone perceives as a store of value, a way of taking your labor and your productivity and your investment in materials and being able to give it.
Maybe it'll be peach schnapps.
It could be anything. Personally, all right.
Y'all have a good night.
Thank you. You too.
Yeah.
I do want to finish this, though, because I think this is a really, really important question. The deal here is that libertarians don't believe in the Federal Reserve because they believe that money should represent its own value. That a Federal Reserve note, that now you can't even get silver certificates, and in the 1930s they banned gold certificates. So now any piece of paper you have is backed by the full faith and credit of the United States, to which some people would sneer, yeah, as much as that's worth. And that's the problem that libertarians have with the Federal Reserve, and that is why you often hear that they want either a gold or silver certificate that they can hand into a bank and say, I want a dollar's worth of gold or silver, or they want gold or silver coins. So that's the objection, I guess, in a nutshell. Like, Berta, you had something you wanted to add?
Yeah, because it's so silly. They want to be able to have a certificate that says there's a piece of gold somewhere else. When you hold a piece of stock, that's a certificate that says there's an asset somewhere. So,
there is a fundamental difference.
I don't quite know what that difference is because the value of gold is just as volatile as the value of any stock.
Well, it is now. But gold still has some intrinsic value. Any commodity has some intrinsic value. So if you have a gold or silver certificate, their argument would be, at least when I get my hands on one of those, I can go to the bank and demand gold or silver. When they used to have silver certificates, you could go to the bank and get silver coins or silver dollars. In my lifetime, you could do that. That's what meant silver on demand.
You're right, but their theory breaks down with enforcement. They don't want the government. They don't like the government. Who enforces that what they receive is silver? Who enforces that they would even receive the silver?
Well, I'm saying that they can live with that. What they really want is to not have to rely on the government to exchange a piece of paper for gold or silver. That's why they want gold coins and silver coins, or copper coins, as the case may be, something that represents the value of the thing you're handling, so the government doesn't even have to be involved. And that's why you've got groups that want to mint their own coins. But they're not legal tender, unless someone wants to take them. I've got a caller. We do have open lines, 713-526-5738. This discussion has gone nowhere where I expected it to go, but that's the cool thing about open forum. You just never know. It's like sort of free mental association. It's very cool. Cesar, how are you doing tonight? You're on the air.
So far, so good.
Thank you. Good. I'm glad to hear that. So what's on your mind tonight?
Well, I want to know, what is y'all stance on medical marijuana?
Whoa.
Because I think it should, if it's medicine, legalize it, regulate it, tax it, all that stuff. I mean, that's what everyone's arguing over, money. They want more, and they're looking for new revenues. So instead of law enforcement writing tickets and committing civil asset forfeitures to bolster their own roles, why don't we just legalize it for medicinal purposes at first, see how that works out, and then give them a portion of the money. And hopefully it doesn't work out like the lottery in the Texas education.
Boy, Texas has the cheapest freaking lottery in the country, I got to tell you. They really do. But that's another discussion.
Right.
You asked me what I think of it, and I'm going to preface this by saying that I am a product of my generation. I have no doubt I'm somewhat older than you are, So I try to
I'm 37.
I'm
60. We're probably about the same age.
Well, I'm flattered, but I'm probably almost twice that.
You don't sound it.
Thank you. That's good. I'm actually 63. So I grew up in a very transitional period, seeing things change in very, very radical ways. I would say my personal opinion of marijuana, I think that if there's a difference between alcohol and marijuana, it's that you can use alcohol in moderation. It actually has flavors. You can actually mix it in with other products and get different kinds of taste sensations. And yes, you can get drunk, and it is a form of disinhibitor. I think if I have a fundamental issue with marijuana as a drug, as a recreational drug, it's that marijuana is solely for the purpose, essentially, of getting drunk. It's like you're buying the cheapest...
energy drinks, no one bats an eye at those, and those are gateways to speed.
I've not heard that said before. That's interesting to contemplate.
Because people don't make the connection. When we were kids and people would say, look, he's all hopped up on that Coca-Cola.
Yeah, Coca-Cola really used to be the real thing.
Yeah,
the FDA had them ban Coca.
We need to drink Mountain Dew and Dr. Pepper because it got us all jittery. And now you have these teenage kids down in 2 or 3 monsters a day. And then when they get older, the monster doesn't do it, so they turn to like the diet pills and the stuff like that.
I don't know that I've heard that connection made before. Egberto, have you heard that kind of connection made before?
Not really, but...
That's interesting.
Yeah, but I agree with the caller. I think, actually, I would go a lot further than the caller. I don't buy the argument that drinks can be flavored and that sort of thing with regards to what most people use.
I like margaritas. I don't care for martinis. There's a difference.
Right, but you see, you're a special kind of guy. I mean, I try to tell you that the folks on the outside, they drink to get high. They don't say it.
Not everybody drinks, smoke a joint to get high. The same. Well, okay, aside from getting high, now let's assume you're not taking it for actual medicinal purposes. You're not on chemo. You don't have migraines.
You're taking it to relax, just like how people drink a beer to relax. A lot of people smoke a joint to relax. And by the way, just to tell your audience, Mike, I don't do coke, I don't do marijuana, I don't do anything. I rarely even drink. But I think people should have that right to smoke. I mean, I think alcohol has proven to be a lot more destructive than marijuana. I think if you look at the stats, you'll see that. But you know, I don't understand in reality why marijuana is illegal. I really don't.
I guess what I can add to that, to the extent it's any kind of an addition at all, I concede it's complicated. And as they say, my views on the subject have evolved a lot over the years, which I think is fair. I think if your views don't evolve, then you're just stuck in a mindset, and that's just narrow and not useful. So
I agree with you, because when I was a kid in high school, yeah, I used to smoke to get high. And then I entered the workforce and can't do it anymore.
Right.
But it's been shown to help alleviate seizures in epileptic patients.
You know, one of the problems with medicinal marijuana that I've been reading, and of course I'll concede that some of what you read is essentially propaganda in one form or another.
I'll agree with that.
It's very hard to know. I think that there have been very limited scientific investigations, quantifiable scientific investigations into the medicinal value, if any, of marijuana for certain applications. I think also the fact that you can't quantify the amount of THC in THC, I believe, is the chemical, right? I think the fact you can't quantify that, it's kind of like going into a health food store and buying supplements. You don't know what the purity is. You don't really know what the concentration is. You don't know what the trace elements are. So, you know, that mucks up things. I think we need more research. I think that increasingly I've come to believe that if you smoke marijuana, you need to treat it as if you're drinking alcohol. You shouldn't drive while you're under the influence. You should do it in a place that's safe. Some people react badly. I'll be honest. When I was a teenager, I smoked marijuana 3 times. I never reacted well to it. I mean, I reacted badly to it. So, you know, there's that kind of person also that for whatever biological, anatomical reason, I didn't respond well to it, which means that I can't identify with what people like about it. So I have that narrowness of experience. You know, if you want to talk about outlawing marijuana, the fact that it has so many industrial uses by itself is like a whole argument about why are we outlawing this crop that the United States could probably make hundreds of millions or billions of dollars utilizing and exporting. So there's that whole other aspect of it.
Right.
I think it has to do with the alcohol industry, too. You know, people probably would smoke
that. Yeah, because if alcohol tried to get approved by the FDA today, it wouldn't pass. You don't die from a heroin overdose. I mean, you don't die from heroin, which you can die from a heroin overdose.
You do die from
heroin
overdose.
You don't die from heroin withdrawal, but alcohol withdrawal can kill you.
I don't know that I've heard that. I mean, I know that alcohol has some horrible effects on the liver and the brain and the neurological system and, you know, fat tissue developing and muscle fibers and all this other stuff. But I've never heard of dying from alcohol withdrawal.
There's a textbook called In the Grit. You should definitely check it out. It kind of explains all that.
In the Grit. G-R-I-T?
Grip.
Grip.
Yes, sir.
I may look that up. That's kind of interesting.
Yes, sir. Before I became a corporate guy, I went into the... I was training to be an LCDC, Licensed Chemical Dependency Counselor.
Oh, okay. So I will take you then as being somewhat more authoritative than myself on this subject.
I just read the same books I can recommend to other people.
Okay. That's interesting. That's interesting. I think to wrap up the point, I think that to some extent what it comes down to, and actually I was going to talk about abortion and Texas abortion laws and some of the demonstrations that went on last week in Austin, and that there's a court case that apparently was resolved tonight, but the judge has not made a decision, but the judge has sort of telegraphed what her decision is going to be. And I think it really comes down to puritanical morality.
Exactly.
Anything that makes you feel good must be evil, because God just doesn't want you to feel that good. Unless you're doing God's work, whatever that should be defined
as. Well, like Roger Waters said, they showed us how to feel good and told us to feel bad.
I think that there's truth to that.
Mike, did you say that she telegraphed the decision?
Yes. Let me pull out my little thing.
Well, let me let you guys get on to your next topic. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much for calling. I appreciate it. You made some interesting points. Judge Lee Yeakel on Wednesday night, I printed this out just before I came here. It's timed at about 5:14 p.m. today. And the first two paragraphs, this is an AP story. A federal judge presiding over a lawsuit against new Texas abortion restrictions says she has a problem with anyone traveling 150 miles from medical care if the procedure could be done closer. U.S. District Judge Lee Yeakel, I think that's the name, on Wednesday didn't issue a ruling following closing arguments in a trial challenging a Texas law that would ban abortions at more than a dozen clinics starting September 1st. But Yeakel honed in on the question of how far is too far for a woman to obtain the constitutional right of ending a pregnancy.
Sounds like a good news for the pro-choice folks.
It sounds like good news for the pro-choice folks. I want to, since I have now successfully segued into that topic, Lee, I'll get with you in a second. Since I have successfully segued into that, I want to talk just for a minute. I've talked about this on my HD3 show. I've mentioned it at least once on this show. I think that the pro-choice forces need to do another prong of attack. You know, it's one thing to say women are entitled to reproductive rights, women are entitled to freedom of choice, it's both a constitutional right and it should be a human right, and all of these other things, the terrible stories about women who had botched abortions and women who couldn't get abortions, all of these terrible stories. But I think that when you go to Austin and you do that kind of protest, when the very people who are passing these laws go into private conversation, they say, yeah, it's working. You see all these women out here that are telling us these stories? It's working exactly like we wanted. So I think that while that kind of protest is productive for a certain segment of the population that is politically swayable, I think that you need to approach it from also a second point of view. And I think that, and I'm going to be brief because Lee's on the line. I actually had a whole long thing about this. I think we need to attack them as being perhaps moral authoritarians, sexual dictators, Puritan oppressors. I think that we need to basically call these people out as what they are. They are moralists who want to tell other people how to live their lives. It's not about abortion. If it was about abortion, they would be pro-birth control. They're anti-birth control. And the reason they're both anti-birth control and anti-abortion, which makes no sense to so many people, it dawned on me at some point, it's because both of them enable sex. They don't want you to have sex. That's the bottom line. These conservatives, and you just have to listen to some of the quotes from Rick Santorum and some other folks that's on, you've got audios and videos on YouTube, they don't want you to have sex. That's why they not only don't want you to have abortions, they also don't want you to know about birth control, because either one enables you to have sex. So we are talking about literally going back to Puritan times, where sex outside of marriage and child conception was evil, and if you're going to have sex, by God, we're going to make sure you suffer all the consequences of having sex, because we're not going to teach you how to avoid STDs, we're not going to teach you how to avoid pregnancy, and by golly, if you get pregnant, you're going to pay for it. And oh, by the way, since the women are the evil temptresses and men are virtuous, basically, unless they are tempted by women, we're going to make sure that women have the incentive to stop men from having sex. Okay, that's a condensation of the story I was going to tell.
Wow.
We need to think about this, folks. This needs to be a political attack based on sexual and puritanical authoritarianism. This is dictatorship. This is from the people who want small government. Dictatorship. Lee, now that I've ranted, you're on the air. Thank you so much for calling. You've got about 4 or 5 minutes, so plenty of time. How are you doing tonight?
Well, I'm doing great, and I'll say that your last explanation was absolutely fantastic.
Thank you.
I am pro-choice, and I am pro-possession of tools that allow you to enforce the Second Amendment.
Interesting.
What I called about was your issue on marijuana.
Okay. That was Cesar's issue, but I'm cool with that.
Okay. Now, let me backtrack, because you need to listen to Dean Becker a lot more and go back into the archives, because there have been thousands of studies done on the benefits of medical marijuana.
Okay.
We don't have to do any more. All it's going to do is be redundant and replace what's already been done.
Well, replication of experimental results is not necessarily a bad thing.
Why waste the time, money, and effort, except what's been presented, factual, functional, let people get relief now. And how many overdoses do you know about from marijuana? And drunk drivers kill people. People who use pot, go to sleep, pull off alongside the road. Which one do you want to deal with?
Well, I think you can make the argument that before drunks kill people on the road, they probably feel drowsy enough that they ought to get off the road, but their judgment is impaired.
No, they're not smart enough anymore.
Yeah, their judgment is impaired.
They're too inebriated to be able to have rational thought.
But you do have people that that drive under the influence of marijuana. I mean,
guess what? What, 1% compared to DWIs with drugs, other drugs, and alcohol?
I think Colorado is going to make a very, very interesting test case, because marijuana being legal, I'm sorry, just 1 second, and then I'll let you talk. I think with marijuana being legal, I think we'll see if those statistics hold up once the availability of marijuana becomes anything close to the availability of alcohol.
All you need to do is go to California right now and what they're enforcing, and look at what's happening in Texas, because they have the ability to issue a citation instead of an arrest for people who are not impaired but are using, okay? And it depends on the jurisdiction you're in and what they do. You can be less impaired than I am right now after several inebriating beverages, that you know and you're intelligent enough and comprehensive enough, I'm not safely driving, I'm tired, I'm going to get off the road. That's what pot does.
I have known people who smoke under the influence of pot, and the excuse they give me, and it actually sounds a lot like the excuse of a drunk, is I just get much more focused on what I'm doing.
That's a fact. They slow down. They're more cautious. They don't cause accidents.
Well, but drunks will also tell you, well, I may be drunk, but I'm just really focused. And what cops will tell you is one of the ways they can see that somebody is driving under the influence is the fact that their eyes kind of don't move. They're not checking what's going on the left and their right and behind them. They're not using their mirrors. They're so focused on concentrating on the road that that by itself suggests they're impaired.
And I'll buy that. But you don't get that from people who are using marijuana. Now, you brought up a very interesting and actually more functional point that I'll superly support you on.
Okay.
It's not products that can be made from marijuana. It's products that can be made from hemp.
Yes. Yes.
Because
and
marijuana,
thank you for clarifying,
is a small subculture of the product of the hemp plant.
Yes. You're right.
We're losing paper. We're losing things they make shoe soles out of for sandals.
Rope, carpet backings.
I'm sorry?
Rope, carpet backings.
Yeah, a whole lot of things.
Yep.
I mean, it's a good replacement for, the most recyclable material that we could possibly use.
Well, as they say on MSNBC, you look like you're getting the last word tonight. Thank you so much for calling. No, hey, no, great. I appreciate it. I let you.
Thank you for humoring me, and keep doing what you're doing. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you as well. Well, we've had, I think, a great show, and it's all the callers making it a great show. I love it. You've been listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig and Egberto Willis on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. Remember, you can go to kpft.org, click on that tip jar, and you can say thank you by making at least a small donation to KPFT. That would be great. Have a great week. I'll see you next Wednesday. And remember, slower traffic, keep right. Jesse wants to remind me, it's not just a good idea, it's the law. Have a great week.
Many American young people enlist in the military without knowing really what it's going to be like because they're looking for opportunities to forward their education and their career. Here in Houston, we have a special organization that works to inform young people about the realities of military enlistment and also about alternatives to the military for education, careers, and service. You can support this organization, the Houston Committee for Youth and Non-Military Opportunities, and enjoy a wonderful jazz concert at the same time on Sunday, August 31st at 7 p.m., Houston Mennonite Church at 1231 Wirt Road. And hear the Bob Henschen Trio and the Free Radicals. Donation of $10 if you can, and hope to see you there.
This is KPFT 90.1.
Many companies will match gifts made to nonprofit organizations. A matching gift from your company will help KPFT preserve independent music, arts, news, and views for generations to enjoy. Participating in your company's matching gift program is as easy as 1, 2, 3. Step 1. Make a gift to KPFT. Pledge today at kpft.org. Step 2. Contact your human resources office for eligibility requirements and to obtain a matching gift form. Many companies match the gifts of retirees, spouses, and surviving spouses. Step 3. Fill out the employee portion of the form completely. Send the form to KPFT, attention, matching gift.